can I see this? Hey, everybody. Welcome. Good evening. It's good to see you. I'm going to read off of this because if I read from here, I can't read it too well. So I do have these if you're interested. They're up here. It's called Your Life Idyllic. This is an excerpt from a short story. This is called, the short story is called An Affliction of Starlings. There is a funny name about this. Flocks of starlings are actually called murmurations, but I did not find that out until after this book went to print. So for this, they are afflictions. I get my daughter on Sundays, 8 a.m. until 9 at night. Tall for her age and deathly skinny, Roxanne reminds me of a fledgling crane. She has yet to display the graceful carriage her mother demonstrates with the same body, but it's coming, and my daughter, like my ex, fills me with dread. She's skin and bones, which, coupled with the other worries of parenting a 14-year-old one day a week, keeps me smoking. For the time being, I pop a Nicorette instead. Sometimes I think Roxy will vanish between the time I drop her off and the Sunday that follows. But sometimes she eats. She likes this rundown diner a few miles from her mother's fortress in stately Grosse Pointe Shores. From the restaurant, we usually get a game plan, movies, Detroit Institute of Art, a play downtown, and then we sally forth and conquer. My ex doesn't wave this morning, only issues last-minute instructions to Roxy, who strolls to the car with headphones on. She bends inside and greets me with a cheek-to-cheek peck. The music from her headset is loud, and with a finger-twisting motion, I ask her to turn it down. She whips out her smartphone and swipes it quiet. She's underdressed for mid-January, even though there's been a respite this week with temperatures hitting mid-40s for 3 days straight. "Where's your heavy jacket?" I ask. But she dismisses my question with a wave of her hand. Once buckled in, she says, "Bonjour, papa." I'm not in the mood for the French this morning, so I say in English, "Good morning," back. This is an affront to her. And in response, she begins tweeting the status of our transit, then turns her music back up. Roxy is old money through her mother's bloodlines. When Carrie Ann and I wed, it was widely acknowledged by both families that I was marrying up. The only inheritance I can offer is a term life policy, a nagging sense of social justice, and a propensity toward malaise. Roxy calls the last of these my depression, but I'm the therapist here, not her. Traffic is light this early, churchgoers mostly. We reach the Travis coffee shop through a series of back and forths that bring us from the palatial expanses of the shores to the gray concrete sprawl of East Point. To a native Detroiter, East Point is just East Detroit. The city planners shuck and jive with a name change. We park in the Travis lot, and my Impala shows the outside temperature is a crisp 45. After December's last blast of snow, ice, and cold, 45 in the morning feels much warmer than it is. Everywhere the grass is brown. Leaves not cleared from fall are soggy. Kitty corner to us, the Amoco on 9 Mile does brisk business. I consider crossing over and getting smokes, but the craving passes. Starlings fill the bare branches in the trees at each corner of the parking lot. The murmuration generates quite the racket of chatter, squawk, and chirp. Inside, Roxy and I sit at the counter. We are flanked by older black men, both in flannel, both reading papers. Roxy usually likes to twist and turn on the Naugahyde swivel stools, but today she is still. She'd say not to freak if I asked what's wrong, so I don't. The waitress, Willa, sets down two menus. Roxanne flips our coffee cups from their stone saucers to right side up. "Salut," she says. "Du café, s'il vous plaît?" Willa nods and fills each cup. week in, week out, Willa knows Roxy's routine and has shown us extraordinary, albeit perfunctory, tolerance. If we were to never show up again, I'm sure she wouldn't even ask what happened. Roxy started taking French a few years ago. France seemed to be her first crush, the cute boy who looks past her gait, height, and tiny mist of acne that dots her high cheekbones. Roxy is smart, but France isn't intimidated. France appreciates it. Class after class, France keeps passing Roxy notes, and it's working. Roxy is in love. She went so far as to publicly change the pronunciation of our last name. G-A-U-T-H-I-E-R, she admonished me, is pronounced Gautier, not Gautier. I remember she added the accusation, "You don't know much about your heritage, do you?" I didn't, but my defense was feeble. I said that I was American, that names didn't matter here. That was America's great promise. The angle played nicely for Roxy. "Good," she said. "You won't mind then how I pronounce mine." Since, Roxy has exhausted her private school's French resources. She's topped out there and is now taking AP classes at nearby Macomb Community College. She also has a Belgian woman who tutors her twice a week. And in 3 short days, she is off to Paris for the French club's annual trip. Next year, she will do a full year's exchange. This is shrinking my world to subatomic proportions. For the past few months, Roxy only picks at her food during breakfast. She pushes it into a pile, moves it to one side, separates it into groups, then pushes it to the opposite side. She might nibble a rye crust, eat a fruit garnish, take maybe a smidge of bacon, but that's it. Her meals go uneaten. She finishes her 3rd cup of coffee and gestures, not in a rude fashion, but with eyebrows and nods, as Willa passes with a stainless steel coffee pot. She starts in with Willa, who has Roxy down. "Tu me donnerais encore un café?" "Mm-hmm," Willa says, until I get pissed. "Roxy! Wait! Speak English! English, s'il vous plaît!" "Oh, papa," she pouts, then turns back to Willa and says, "Merci," and as she fills Roxy's extended cup. "How do you say enough?" I ask. "Ça dépend." "On what?" She switches over. "On what you're trying to say, but for what you're trying to say, I think it's," she searches, "ça suffit." "Do that, then. Ça suffit." "Bon," she says. "D'accord, la voilà." There's a pause. Then she laughs a laugh full of the high giggling rant that reminds me of decades worth of pushing her on swings. It is devoid of the self-consciousness. I'd classify it as dorky. A snort is sure to follow. Where has that laughter gone? Lately, it's been all pouting, frumping, shoulder shrugging, and poo-pooing everything I say or suggest. I glance at her, raising a brow in query, but she confuses my investigation with something else. "Okay," she says, then snorts. "I'll stop, I'll stop." She keeps giggling, then her cellular beeps. She pulls it from back pocket and begins with the swipes, pecks, wipes, and taps that compromise so much of our time together now. A smile lingers as she works the screen. I'm sure she's not planning on finishing her food. She turns, snaps a picture of me, then goes on typing, flips to show me, grumpy, on Twitter and Facebook. The caption reads, "Dad with grimace." It has already been liked and already retweeted. Once complete, she tucks away her phone and separates her home fries into their own pile. Her getup also worries me. Chukka boots, factory blue pants hung to the hip, a long-sleeve denim shirt tied at midriff, and a work jacket Peugeot emblem above one zippered pocket, the name Hugh above the other. I get a fitful vision of the future. Roxy driving a transcontinental Kenworth back and forth the I-90 corridor. There's a tattoo on her left arm, her fighting side, a black rose with Papa barely legible from long hours in the sun. Not even Carrie Ann's fortune can protect our little girl from my fears. You have to eat, I tell her. You're wasting away. Everything's fine, she says. I'm concerned. I eat, like, all the time. I worry. She looks up to me, reaches out, pats the top of my head. Don't, she says. Thank you so much.